The Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
Good evening. You are listening to the Blackshaw Arts Hour. I am with Ellie, and Matt's back.
Hello.
Sorry, Ellie, you do get to say hello.
That's okay. Hi.
Matt, you're back from Edinburgh.
I am.
How was it?
It was really good.
I mean, we heard a little bit about it from last week's show.
Yeah, I feel like I've learned to pace it properly now.
Okay.
Like, I saw a lot of shows, but I still felt like I had a holiday.
Sure.
Ooh, boasty.
Because sometimes you can go to Edinburgh and it feels, and you come back more drained than you were at work.
Yeah, you need to book a couple of days off for recovery time.
Yeah.
And hence that, you haven't actually managed to see a film. So we're doing a cool film this week, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. Coming up as well, I went and saw the Book of Mormon last night, so I'm going to talk about that. Matt's going to talk to us a little bit more about Edinburgh. And we're doing the Horror Festival, aren't we, Ellie?
Yeah, Blackshaw's taking two things to the London Horror Festival this year.
Yep, so we're going to play you something we did earlier in the year. It's an interview with the cast of Black Shuck later on in the show. But the first thing that we're going to do is this thing.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
So, Matt, you didn't get to see anything that's out at the cinemas.
I'm afraid not. Sorry. Bad me. Slap on the wrist.
It's fine. We can move past that. What we are going to talk about is
Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Which we're going to try not to say two more times.
Yeah, as long as it's not in succession. That's why there was a pause there where Aisha and Matt looked at each other like, we can't say it at the same time. Because then what if we say it at the same time and then that's two and then one of us says it again, that's three.
So for the people that don't know this film.
So this is a 1988 movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's an early Tim Burton movie with Michael Keaton in it. I had never seen this movie before.
Yeah, so I made my partner watch it on the weekend, and this is why Matt ended up watching it as well, because I just had it on my computer. And I can't believe people haven't seen this film.
No, it's for me, it's a favourite, like a childhood favourite.
Yes.
Maybe like an early teens favourite, actually. I don't think I was allowed to watch it as a small child.
Well, that's what I sort of thought, because I hadn't seen it for ages until I watched it on the weekend, and I was watching it going, I can't remember when I saw this, how old I was when I saw it for the first time. It's not for kids. Like,
no.
Not for young kids.
No, I think it's too scary for young children. But I think what you're referring to is the kind of adult jokes. And actually, I think probably as a young teenager, I didn't pick up on a lot of them.
I think there's definitely elements of that. But there's also a bit of swearing.
Is there?
Yeah.
And there's some suicide references as well, which
mm-hmm.
I feel like wouldn't potentially get past sort of the certification people.
Yeah. What do you think it would be now? Like if it was a new film coming out.
I don't think it would make PG. I think it would have to be more. Because
would it be a 12 or would it go up to 15?
I don't know.
Anyway, we just completely have disregarded Matt's reviewing ability in this segment. So Matt, I want to know what you thought about it.
So should we, for anybody like me who is late to the party,
yeah.
So what this is about is Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis are a couple who die in an accident and come back to haunt their house as ghosts. And a load of out-of-town people move into their house that they're haunting and they want to try and get rid of them. And they are supposed, by the rules of the afterlife, to do this themselves. But there's also this guy called Beetlejuice, that's twice we've said it now, who
doesn't count unless it's in quick succession.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, right.
We'll talk about the implications of that rule later on.
played by Michael Keaton, who is this sort of, bills himself a bio-exorcist who will get rid of the living people in your house.
Mm-hmm.
Who is a kind of this kind of outrageous figure. So the first thing, the first impression that I had of this was, I think I had it in my head that Alec Baldwin had never been young.
Yep.
I think in my head he was born a silver fox.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really odd seeing him.
How
as
weird
a young
does he
man
look?
With floppy hair and big glasses.
Yeah,
he's quite skinny as well. Like he has quite a different build.
But he has the same voice already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's incredible. Yeah. I love him.
So it's like it's early him and it's early-ish Michael Keaton. I don't really know what his sort of acting timeline is. It's pretty early Tim Burton. And another thing that was interesting was the... this is always what's interesting when you're sort of re-watching the old movies, and we do this a lot when we're doing the retro reviews, is thinking about its influence that it's had, and sort of looking back and seeing how it's fed into other movies later down the line. And it's such a Tim Burton movie, for a start. The weird one is, it looks like a Henry Selick movie as well. Henry Selick's Tim Burton's usual visual effects and animation guy.
Right.
He did The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
Or in fact, I think Selick actually directed Nightmare Before Christmas, and Tim Burton has just like put his name on it.
There's a lot of iconography in Beetlejuice that is just has been taken and put in other films. It's amazing to see that.
Yeah, it's like, so we have this sort of Beetlejuice turns himself into a snake at one point, and there's sort of other animated creatures. I've said it three times.
You said it three times.
There were gaps. I said
not
in quick
succession. It's okay.
And there's sort of these weird sandworm monsters in the afterlife, which all look like Henry Selick creations, but he wasn't involved in this movie at all.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah,
I wonder if they were Tim Burton ideas and then he...
I have no idea. It's really interesting to... I was looking... Tweet us if you know the answer to this. I was looking around trying to work out who actually did do the animation, how that style has come in, and whether it was a Tim Burton idea, and that's why the future films with his name on have that similar sort of style.
Yeah. I was talking to... I love this film, and I always have. But watching it as an adult, it's sort of a bit of a mess, I think. And it's something that I was talking about with my partner, that it's like Tim Burton's playing really early on. And it's not as polished as, Edward Scissorhands. And it's not very... the storyline isn't as developed as something like The Nightmare Before Christmas. And it just sort of, to me, feels a bit like he's just putting stuff together and hoping it sort of works, which it does, in a way. The visual stuff of the model, and if they're in the model or they're not, and, that's really clever. But then some elements of the storyline and the characters, and especially, character development, some of them just aren't developed at all, I don't think. The relationship between Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis, I was a bit on a second watch.
You're just supposed to take that for granted, I think, aren't you?
Yeah, I think so. And they're slightly wooden, I think. But I don't know. That's just how I...
They're odd sort of characters because they're quite twee, the characters, initially. And so you don't really engage with them from the outset. So then by the time they become a little bit looser, you're not really invested in them, is kind of the way I saw them. They're the straight players that you never really care that much about.
The scrappiness makes it quite unpredictable, I found. I never really felt like I could get a grip on, okay, this is what this movie is and where it's going. And, a lot of movies you can sort of get an idea from by the middle of the second act.
Yeah.
Okay, this is how it's going to unfold from here.
Yeah.
Couldn't really get that in this.
No, it doesn't really flow that much, does it?
It wasn't until right at the very end that it sort of comes together as being, it's sort of saying, don't be too reactionary when new people move in who you don't really get on with. If you don't call the exterminator immediately and give them a bit of time, then you might actually warm to them, so don't do anything too rash, order a bio exterminator.
But also, Beetlejuice as... himself is a really strange character. He sort of is doing this thing that's like a stand-up comedy routine, but within a movie that he sort of doesn't fit into at times. Mm-hmm. And also, you can't understand him sometimes. Do you find that?
I didn't find that particularly, no.
Because of his really gruff voice.
It's the gruffness and the way, because he keeps flipping through accents and, doing characters.
Very fast.
And very, very quickly. And there was points where I was like, what is he saying? Was this just fun for me as a kid because it was crazy and zany? Or, is he actually saying words now?
Zany is a word that was in my brain a lot while watching it.
Yeah.
Well, the character of Beetlejuice is manic.
Yeah.
So that I think, kind of dictates the style of the whole film.
Yeah.
It's not a straight film in which he sits. He kind of spreads that feeling throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it feels quite like you can't figure out where it's going, because he is completely unpredictable. He doesn't really have a rationale or a set of rules that he follows as such.
Mm.
Or he says he does, and then he'll ignore them and do the opposite.
And then come up with random new conditions. Like
yes.
this whole, like, so there's the rule we're given is, like, he will appear if you say his name 3 times. And then it turns out, I don't think it's ever stated, but it then turns out that he'll disappear. You can banish him again by saying it 3 times again.
Mm.
And then there's this thing that comes in maybe like 15 minutes from the end where he needs to get married.
Yeah, that's a really weird plot twist. It's like, was that his plan all along? Like, to get out of, like, doing, like, the purgatory that he was in? Like, I don't know if that was the answer to that question, but it was inappropriate because it's very young Winona Ryder that he wants to get married to. And that's
very
weird.
Very young and none more goth.
Oh, yeah.
She's so goth in this movie.
Yeah. She's incredible in it. And then the dancing at the end, you know, like, it's just all this, like, really bizarre stuff put together.
There's a dance sequence halfway through as well. But
yeah,
like,
a lot of calypso music in this movie, which is not a, you know, not something that you would expect.
Yeah, it's like, this is a haunted house movie, but suddenly we've decided that haunting means that everybody gets possessed and does dance routines together at dinner.
I mean, you know, if I was going to be possessed, that's what I would want to be doing. 100%.
It's got one of my favourite songs in, though. That song at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Shake Sonora.
Shake Sonora, yeah. We do play that at all of our Black Shore parties.
Yeah, when the Bandits are playing, yes. But I think it's... I mean, what did you feel watching the film? Were you entertained?
I was entertained. Yeah, I wasn't second screening watching it. Like, I wasn't on my phone.
Right. Well, that's good.
I was watching it.
I didn't know what you meant then. I was like, do you watch two things at the same time
Do you
now?
Watch it twice?
Yes,
that's a good term.
I like it in two different angles.
Second screening, that's a good term.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to say that to people when they're on their phone, when they should be paying attention.
Stop second screening.
Yeah, it probably needs to be a little more punchy than that. But
yeah, like it was. There were points where I was like, I don't really know what I'm watching here, but there weren't any points where I was bored.
That's good.
Because it was always doing something different. You know, it's suddenly we've got this sort of almost Terry Gilliam-esque afterlife that's full of bureaucracy and taking a number.
I love those
which
scenes.
Which we get a little bit of. It's
like a waiting room in purgatory.
It really does feel like you said, a director or a writer playing and having lots and lots of different ideas and just touching very lightly on all of them and not really getting very deeply into any of them.
Yeah.
But in a way that's quite satisfying, that leaves you, the audience, to come up with your own ideas about a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I also love those waiting room scenes just for the fact, like, the costuming and the way that everyone is made up just looks amazing. Mm.
Yes,
and just, like, little things like their caseworker who's obviously, like, got a slit throat, and when she smokes, all the smoke comes out of, like, the gap in it. Like, that's just great.
Yeah.
Like, you can't...
The design detail in the film is brilliant.
Yeah.
Actually, it's worth watching just for that, I think.
And shrunken head has always been a running joke in my family. I don't know why. It was just something we really... found hilarious.
But I would definitely recommend people watch it. I think like you were saying at the beginning, Matt, there's a lot of kind of tropes that actually come from that film and have been, and you'll recognize a lot of it.
Certainly if you've watched anything else that Tim Burton has done, you can watch it and go, that's definitely a Tim Burton film. Oh yes, I see, that's him working that out early in his career.
Well, see Beetlejuice, and if you're worried that we've said it more than 3 times, I think we've decided that the rule is this, that if you say it 3 times in succession, then he comes back or appears.
Then he appears,
You can't say anything in between the mentions.
Yeah.
That's the
right way to bring him about. Okay, good to know. Thank you, Matt. I'm going to ask you at the end of the show this week what you're going to be doing on the next show, just because you've probably not thought about it. And I don't want to be that guy every week that's, you know...
You're finally getting to know me.
I know. It's taken me 47 episodes, but here we are. We're 47, guys.
Yeah. We're old.
We're edging towards a milestone.
We're edging towards the big 5-0.
Party.
I think we're going to have to do a party episode.
Good.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Get everyone back in. Everyone who's ever been on the show.
Yeah. We don't have our hands big enough.
We can find a place big enough. Expect the call from me in the next couple of weeks if you've ever been on this show. You're expected at 5:00. So,
if any listeners really want to come, you can tweet us at Blackshot Update. Give us a good reason, and we'll think about it.
Yeah, and for anyone that's been on the show that doesn't want to come on the show, you need to change your number tonight because I'm calling you, Matt. So, we're going to talk to you now about Edinburgh, and you're going to do us an Edinburgh wrap up.
Yeah.
I want the best thing that you saw, the worst thing that you saw.
Ooh.
Is that too hard?
No.
We could rephrase it as the thing you least enjoyed.
Yeah.
Well, the worst thing that he saw could have been, like, you know, a guy vomiting on the street at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know? Like, it didn't have to be a show. Like, we're getting the full Edinburgh experience here.
That's what we're going for. I saw stuff like that in the street in Edinburgh once.
Yeah, okay, you know, save it for...
It's toilet related. I won't go into it.
Okay, maybe let's not. Maybe let's not go there.
And not a representative of Edinburgh. It's a beautiful place.
Matt, do you want to start with... Top.
Well, so I'm happy to be able to do this because I knew this was going to happen. I sat down with our good friend of Blackshaw, Amy Yorston, and recorded that bit that we had on the show, on the previous show.
Yeah.
Where we if I remember rightly what we talked about, I think we said, like, neither of us had really seen a massive five-star show yet.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, like, nothing, and that everything was billing itself as punk. But we weren't really getting that rebellious punk spirit.
Sure.
And then we went off from talking and immediately both saw
Did
shows
you see the unicorn?
That evening.
Oh, wow.
That we really enjoyed and that were anarchic and rebellious and punkish.
Oh, fantastic.
So the one that I've been plugging to absolutely everybody, which it turns out is actually the best reviewed show of this year's Fringe. So for once... I've never
You're
done
on
this
the money.
Before. I've actually seen the show that everybody decided is the good one.
Oh.
Like the real hit of the Fringe. And I can't remember who recommended it to me because I booked it way in advance. So, but whoever it was, thank you. The show is How to Win Against History.
Mm-hmm.
The show is How to Win Against History. It's a new musical by a guy called Serial Davis about a minor Edwardian aristocrat. Whose family, it was the 5th Marquess of Anglesey, and his family tried to expunge him from the historical record, burned all record of him, all pictures, everything, books, basically because he was a cross-dresser, and also he frittered all the family money away putting on plays starring himself.
Is this a true story?
Yes.
What a hero.
And that's why it's How to Win Against History, because they tried to expunge him and
he won.
Here he is back on stage being fabulous.
How did he not get expunged from history? Because, I mean, back in the day, if you burn all of the records, then how else is it?
There's no backup system.
No.
His longtime confidant and tour manager... as he was dying, he told his tour manager, go tell my story, make sure I'm remembered.
Wow.
And the tour manager told the story in a way that didn't actually paint him in a very flattering light.
Oh.
But the story survived
right.
because of that.
Oh, wow.
And it's a hilarious musical slash kind of operetta. Three guys I saw it in a shipping container on the edge of George Square, packed out. And that was, it's just a fantastic show. I laughed more than I laughed at most of the comedy that I saw.
Oh, wow.
So was it billed as theatre?
It's a musical. Musical right, slash okay. opera was the section of the programme it was
wow.
in.
Wow.
Fantastic. Yeah. Do you reckon it will come to London?
I really hope so. It was on in London in June, July at the Oval House.
Oh, right.
And as a preview and then went up to Edinburgh from there.
Mm-hmm.
It's got such good write-ups, I would be really surprised if it didn't go
yeah.
somewhere.
Mm. Oh, that sounds awesome. I want to go see that. If
yeah.
that comes, we should go early.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll
okay.
definitely go see it again.
So, what's the worst thing
I
that
think
happened
I meant...
to you in Edinburgh?
That happened to me? Oh, I don't know. I don't know about
all that you saw.
I did see somebody in the street getting verbally abused by an old blind lady.
Oh
no!
Dear.
Again, not representative of Edinburgh as a whole.
No.
But...
How could she?
Highs and lows.
How did she know where the person was? Was she just shouting at
because
a wall?
Because the person tried to help her across the road, and she definitely did not want any help.
Oh dear.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
Okay, tell us something better than that.
So the other show that we both then went, Amy and I both then went and saw after having said nothing was really floating our boat was We Are Ian,
mm-hmm.
which is a show by a new company called In Bed with My Brother. which is
a right. bold choice.
Yeah, yeah.
The company's name's In Bed With My Brother. Yes. Oh, I just tuned out for a second there and then just came back. Ooh, I don't like it.
I'm sure it's perfectly innocent. Carry on.
Yeah. So it's a verbatim rave show.
What?
So they're about 18, 19. There's three girls in the company. And they interviewed their mate Ian, who's a painter decorator.
Yeah.
And realised that he was the age they are now at the end of the 80s when it was all like rave and house.
Yeah.
And all of that sort of stuff. Like the last great kind of youth music movement.
Yeah, with all those yellow smiley faces.
Yep. And they were like, the show is, if you want to get academic about it, the show is comparing the experience of like being young now and being young then.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And how you sort of get where your outlet is for your creativity and for letting off steam. But the format of the show is that it's basically an hour-long rave. So it has dance breaks. They get the audience up dancing, doing the mashed potato and the cold spaghetti moves. Everybody has a great big dance and jump around on the stage at the end. But throughout, they've got stuff projected on the back. And through, like, it's not just jumping around dancing. It is kind of music and movement and that kind of physical theatre.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sort of going through like police crackdowns on drugs, and there's a. Sort
Did
of,
they take you through the close down of Fabric?
Unfortunately, they didn't get that.
Damn it! It came at the wrong time.
Yet. So there's an extended sequence where he starts talking about the brown biscuit, referring to ease, and they offer the whole audience brown digestive biscuits.
Nice.
The stage ends up covered in digestive biscuit crumbs. Wow. It's just a real and. We were saying everybody was billing their shows as punk, mm-hmm. and we were feeling like we were lacking that genuinely kind of sense of anarchy and just not caring what anybody thinks and really, really letting your hair down. Mm-hmm. And that was the show that really had it.
Okay. Punk's a pretty bold move to go with.
Gets big under a Tory government, though.
That's interesting. Well, that sounds like you had a good time and that you didn't sort of like ruin your body at the same time.
No.
As like a younger man
would have.
I'm still
in one piece.
Congratulations on that, Matt. So that was Matt doing Edinburgh. We're not going to do any more Edinburgh roulette for the foreseeable future, which is very, very
I've
disappointing.
My program.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no.
I mean, that was very responsible of you to recycle it.
I went and saw the Book of Mormon last night, guys.
Yes, the musical that took the West End by storm a couple of years ago, but still going and is very good.
Yeah. I not only loved it, but I also fell in love with the lead guy.
Did you?
Massively. Yeah. Really good looking. Like,
husband's not listening to this. Oh.
No, it's fine. It's fine. We, we've got those allowances, but not like that. thought allowances.
So was he really talented and that upped his attractiveness by like 50%?
Just the dancing, guys. It was just incredible.
I especially enjoyed the tap dancing sequence.
Oh, and the quick changes.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about like theatre magic. Mm. There is one particular scene where I think the lights go out for like maybe 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're all wearing pink vests.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. I was actually with a theatre guy after the show. And he was explaining to me how that happens, and he reckons that they're wearing them as onesies, like tucked into their pants, and then they just flick them over their heads.
Yeah.
Magic. It's incredible.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was, if you have been listening to the show, I went and saw Matilda like a couple of months ago. Hugely different. I was tossing up between seeing Matilda or Book of Mormon with my parents when they're over, and we chose Matilda. And Matilda was like kids in the audience, it was,
I loved it. Cannot stop them.
They're everywhere. Book of Mormon was a completely different experience. And it was a completely different show to what I thought it was going to be.
What did you think it was going to be?
I thought I would learn more about Mormons.
I feel like I learned things about Mormons.
Yeah, I learned something.
Yeah, I learned the origin story, but obviously, like, with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be, not that I wanted it to be intellectual, but I thought it was going to be an intellectualized sort of storytelling of how Mormons are in the modern day and not like going off
the missionary side of it.
I did not expect them to be in Africa. That is not a thing that I expected to be happening. And, you know, like that sort of worried me. I was like, this is going to get racist very quickly. Which, you know, it didn't, which is fine. But there was elements of it because it's supposed to be funny.
It's very self-aware, tongue-in-cheek. Yeah, it's parodying modern portrayals of time in Africa. Yeah.
It blows my mind every time I go and see anything on the West End, just that they do that every night. Like, how is that even possible? I'd love to know them. I'd love to know someone.
We know a couple of people who... We could do an interview.
Yeah. We should do that. That's a great idea.
Okay.
Yeah, stay tuned for that on the Black Show.
I'll send some messages.
Okay.
Content planning live on air.
Hey, this stuff's gold.
Did you have a favourite number? Like, are any of them still in your head a few days later?
My favourite number was the very beginning. And
when
then
they're
the
doorbells.
Yeah, and then the end when they get all the, spoiler alert, the Africans, they sort of convert them and then they do the same thing.
Yeah.
That was amazing and just so funny. And one of the lines that really stuck out for me, which no one else really heard in the audience, because no one else, like, it didn't get a big laugh, but they say in one of the songs that America has already found the cure for AIDS, but they're saving it for the latter day. And no one laughed, and I was like, that's the funniest line ever.
I find that sometimes with, particularly with musicals where it's quite wordy,
It's hard to catch everything. Sometimes
pick up stuff that seemingly no one else has picked up.
Yeah, and that's a really nice, it's quite a nice experience when that happens in a hugely packed audience.
And I think it's probably different every night, certainly from my experience of not from musicals, but straight plays. If an audience is laughing at a joke, they're sometimes still laughing and miss another joke.
Exactly.
Whereas the next night, they might pick up on a different joke first, and then the end of the laugh is timed differently, and they do pick up on the missed joke from the night before. So. Yeah. I think, you know, I'm sure when we interview all of these stars, they'll tell us, but it is different every night, I think.
Yeah, it's also very difficult when you've got a husband who's guffawing next to you and you can hardly hear what's going on stage.
Oh dear, it's very badly behaved of him.
Talking of, not badly behaved, but bless him, there was this quite elderly couple in front of me, and they, the wife of this particular guy, was having to sort of translate all of the jokes to him.
Was he hard of hearing?
He was not catching them.
Oh.
So, and because everyone was laughing, it was quite loud, but she'd sort of lean over and say, she just said this. And he'd be like, okay, I got it. Oh, and then there's the other thing that happened. I went outside in the interval and I was talking to the bouncer and I got one of those little tickets so that I could go back in. And an older woman came out. She was by herself. She would have been like maybe 60. And the bouncer said to her, you're going back in. And she was like, no. And he was like, oh, why not? And she said, oh, I was just very disappointed. Very disappointed. And he was like, what with the show? And she was like, yeah. No, I was expecting it to be better. And then she just walked off into the sunset and never came back.
Wow.
She wasn't offended by it. She was just disappointed. And like, I was like, really? What were you expecting to see?
Maybe she was expecting the Mormon origin story as well.
Yeah, maybe she was expecting it to be more intellectual.
A Mormon biblical epic.
I just don't know what more you can want on a Wednesday night, you know, on the West End. Like, it's pretty high impact entertainment.
Yeah, it's jokes and jokes and jokes and dancing, dancing, dancing and singing.
It doesn't stop.
And lots of shiny, pretty things.
I don't know what this lady's doing in her life, but she must have a very interesting, exciting life.
Everything else is more exciting.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it wasn't that she was offended, actually. I wonder how many people walked out, particularly at the beginning of the run, when it wasn't so widely publicised, that it's kind of on the edge, a lot of the humour, isn't it?
Because it's the same writer as South Park, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, which I didn't realise until last night after I'd seen it, and I can't stand South Park. And it sort of tainted it afterwards, after the effect for me a little bit, because I just, but you know.
They've done other stuff as well, but that's what they're most known for.
Yeah, 20 years of South Park.
But it's interesting that it's not marketed on the outrage or on being sort of treading that line. It's not like, come and see this, it's edgy.
No, like, well, you've got to market it.
People are offended at this. It's just marketed on people really loving it.
Yeah.
Like all the posters and everything.
And the Tonys.
Just quotes from people saying, this is great, I laughed so much.
Yeah. It's well, like, why would you market on anything else if you had 9 Tonys to your name? Like, you got to put that on a poster. So we're going to move on to something a little bit different now. We are doing the Horror Festival. We're taking Black Shuck, which we put on at the Bedford as part of WAF earlier this year, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it's a transfer from Wandsworth Arts Festival in May of this year. It's going now to the London Horror Festival, which mm-hmm. is being run at the Old Red Lion. And it's very exciting to be part of the festival. We did it a couple of years ago with play The Man Sat Next to Me Wrote.
Another WAF to London Horror Festival transfer.
Yeah, it's quite a nice it's a nice London transfer to do.
Nice and easy.
Yeah, and they're spaced out nicely. May and October works quite well. So we've been editing the script and booking in rehearsal dates and going to have to make the set again.
So if you saw it at WAF at the Bedford, it's still worth coming and seeing again because the script's been tweaked and tightened up.
Mm-hmm. So changed. Different scripts, still just as funny and scary, but there'll be some stuff in there you won't have seen. Mm. We've got the original cast returning, so that's Alexander Pankhurst and Rachel Knott. It's very exciting. We start rehearsals on the 24th of September, so very soon.
So we're going to play for you now. This is an interview that Leslie Strachan, who is one of the lovely people who works on Wandsworth Radio, she interviewed you, yes. Ellie, and also Alexander Pankhurst and Rachel Knott. This is them now.
So we're here down at the rehearsal room at Battersea Arts Centre, but I'm with Blackshaw Arts. Ellie, the director, and two actors, Alex and Rachel. I've interrupted proceedings today. A bit of lunging, I saw. So firstly, Ellie, just give us a quick three-seconder
Three seconds, come on. There's a
Blackshuck, whatever is that name all about?
Oh, well, the name is in reference to the legend of a shaggy black dog that lives and roams the areas of Norfolk coastline. So that's where the name comes from.
Right.
And that's where the play is set, on the Norfolk coastline. The play is about two inept smugglers who are smuggling for the first time. And it's the two of them and their conversation while they await the shipment.
Okay, so this is going to go out at the Wandsworth Fringe. Now, why are us Londoners, why are we going to come and see a play about a shaggy dog story on the Norfolk coastline?
Because it's very funny. It's comedy meets horror. It's an hour long. It's above a pub. It's new writing, which is always exciting to see. And it is a very tight, funny piece.
Okay, so let's ask Rachel and Alex, how funny is this play?
Oh, this is hilarious. This is the funniest play I've ever been in, certainly, and I've been in a lot of funny plays.
Funny ha-ha or funny ugh.
Well, that's up to the audience, I suppose.
Yeah.
And you.
And your performance. And my performance, yes, especially.
Absolutely. It is very funny. I think there's a lot of elements of kind of the comedy double act of sort of the straight guy and the
idiot.
Funny guy and the idiot. Yeah, yeah, Alex being the idiot. Which is really, really
funny. In the play.
Oh, no, that stretches through life. It's very fun. I mean, there's some really great comedy moments, some really lovely lines, some very funny
physical
comedy, absolutely, which is being brought out today, certainly. Alex?
I think it's... why people should come and see it is, as Ellie said, it's new writing, and more importantly, it's good new writing, which I think puts a lot of people off sometimes when they hear it. They're like, new writing, oh, it could be a bit dodgy. And in this case, no, not at all. Mm-hmm. It's exciting. It's nice and short. It allows people to come along. They can go to the pub. They can go above the pub and see some theatre, then have the rest of their evening free, which is a nice sort of... It's a nice precursor to the rest of their evening. So, yeah, come along and see it, if only for that.
So the same goes for you as well, obviously. Is this why you only audition for one-hour shows, so you can get down the pub very quickly?
Absolutely,
afterwards?
Yes.
I don't want to speak for Rachel. She's just done that. Obviously, as a performer, I like to see it as an interesting and difficult way of bringing out the character. But yeah, I mean, getting down to the pub is quite important. I don't want to prevaricate too much around that, though.
No.
I just have.
And what about Norfolk accents? Do these feature?
No, luckily, because it's actually quite a difficult accent
to do. A Norfolk
accent
is a really tricky
particular
accent to do, yeah. I spent a lot of my childhood in Norfolk on holiday, And I would never try and do the accent. But thankfully, these two characters are actually from London. This is a modern play, so yeah. we aren't sort of smugglers in the 16th century. We are smugglers in very much the 21st century, and we're from the East End. So we've got, we hope, very good, effective East End accents.
London accents, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You do get a little showcase of the Norfolk accent from a character who does not appear live. We've got a voice-only performance with a genuine Norfolk accent, and it's actually a cameo by the writer.
And he's from Norfolk?
He is from Norfolk.
There we are.
So you do get a little taster of the Norfolk tones. Yeah.
Do we get an appearance of the Shaggy Dog?
Well, that is up to you to interpret, really. The characters encounter something, but we leave it to the imagination of the audience to decide a little bit whether there's any truth behind the legend.
Okay, now Blackshaw's known for its new writing. How did this play make the grade? What was the process?
Well, we, as people who know us will know, we run regular new writing nights and have done for the last 6 years. And Duncan Hans, the writer of Blackshuck, submitted some of his work for one of these new writing nights. It wasn't actually this piece, it was something completely different. But when it comes around to time for the Wandsworth Arts Fringe, we contact writers that we've have had contact with and enjoyed their work and enjoyed working with them, and give them a brief. And Duncan answered our call.
And you guys, the audition process?
The audition process was fairly straightforward. We applied. We got an audition. We went to audition and just had to, like, I think you're Ellie, this is, I'm pointing at, wanted to sort of try out all of the different pairings because it's just two people. It's like we had a lot of actresses, a lot of actors, and then you just mix them up. Mm. So it was nice to audition with a number of different people rather than just like one or two.
Yeah.
Or just yourself.
And aside from the story, what attracted you to the characters that you're playing? Is there any autobiographical stuff going on?
I am a massive drug smuggler. probably shouldn't say that. To be honest, I mean, for me, it's very much, it's kind of a break. A recent work that I've done has involved quite serious work, lovely work. It's kind of nice for me to sort of do something which is a bit more comedy now, just sort of a bit of a break from that. And so that was great, and I really enjoy it. And I like doing an accent. Mm. I quite enjoy that too. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's kind of good. I'm going to repeat myself.
There aren't a lot of parallels to draw between your character, Martha, and you, really, are there, in terms of life experience?
Well, there aren't a lot.
I don't think so.
Well, Ellie, you don't know many things about me.
I think we should get into this.
We really don't want to. No. There aren't many parallels at all, no. We wear the same clothes. It's basically what it is.
And they're roughly the same size.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Alex, what about you?
Not too similar, I think. But in terms of doing it, I just enjoy playing silly characters who... I like, again, the same as Rachel, I like playing comedic roles. I get a lot of enjoyment from that. So doing that is always great fun. Performing with Rachel, though I wouldn't say it to her face, is great fun. Just doing more comedy is always a bonus.
And obviously wearing a T-shirt with Batman on for rehearsals probably is an indicator of your approach to the piece.
I have always considered myself a strident supporter of justice and vigilantism, which is one of the themes that is integral rather to this play. And I think
I think we're getting a good idea as to what I have to work with.
Yeah.
Really.
Fundamentally.
Is what we're
Batman wannabe. I did suggest wearing a cape during rehearsals, but that was turned down.
Yeah.
Sure, annoyingly.
Even for a 16th century smuggler, I don't think that was in the makeup.
I also wanted a tricorn hat, but that was disallowed.
Now you're going for pole dark. And you ain't nowhere.
I'm not allowed.
I feel like I wouldn't have cast Alex for pole dark.
Not, what are you saying?
Not quite the right look.
I've handled a scythe once.
Got it. You were just listening to an interview with Ellie, Alex and Rachel, who are the two cast members of Black Shark, which we are putting on again as a part of the Horror Festival. And the dates for that are, Ellie?
It is the 11th to the 15th of October. It's going to be showing at 7 p.m. at the Old Red Lion. Mm. Tickets will be on sale very soon. We will be putting links to the tickets all over our internet presence. So follow us on Twitter at Blackshaw Update, or have a look on Facebook, just search for Blackshaw Theatre. Or you can go to our website, blackshawonline.com.
We have all the things.
All the things.
Another thing that we have coming up as a part of the Horror Festival is Scare Slam. So yeah. We did this last year, towards the end of last year. It was our first ever one. It's sort of like a new writing night, but kind of not. But if you listen to this piece, you'll kind of get an idea, and then we'll give you some more info about it after you've heard this.
All right, I'm just going to read you an extract, actually. So this is from my story, The Ossuary Tract, which is published in Scare Mongrel, which is a collection of horror stories out by The Pigeonhole, a small press company. So I hope you enjoy. Anyway. "Do you smell bone dust?" the woman asks eagerly, and the old man immediately stops pulling open his door. He holds it half open and squints. In the dim light of a hallway, he appraises the stranger. "It's a hell of an opening line," he says, and then he waits and he stares. After a moment, she steps forward and he steps back, and then she's at the threshold and she smiles, a smile full of thick teeth. "Please," she says, I have evidence. Your essay." The old man is entirely still. He stopped breathing, and on the edge of the door, his knuckles are pale as his grip tightens. "My essay," and he sighs and opens the door and lets her in. He doesn't recognize her as one of his students. She must have found a copy in the common room. As they walk to his living room, she doesn't stop talking. He's barely listening, but she lists all the usual things. I read it last night, and it was incredible. I've never read about extraplanar emotional predation. How did you find me?" Normally, he hears these rants in his office, in the refectory. He's unsettled by her appearance at his home. "The Ossuary Tract, the bone book, how did you decide on that name? I have so many questions." I understand. "But what are you doing here? How did you find out where I live?" The scent of the catacombs." He holds up a finger to silence her, and then runs that hand over the back of an armchair, his fingers lingering on the worn upholstery. He looks around the room at the bookshelves and inhales deeply through his nose. All he can smell are the flowers on the table and the remnants of his lunch in the kitchen. "Is there something else? The scent of bone dust?" If there is, he can't tell. He turns to her and speaks. "Os Karkarias, look, the essay was designed to make you think about the possibilities of evolution in an endless universe. It was designed to make the reader think about the energy of emotion, something as simple as a story can elicit. It's a hypothetical, it's an exercise of the mind. Predators and parasites that live in stories, creatures that feed on emotion. It's an exercise. I'm flattered you've tracked me down, and I'm glad you enjoyed my essay, but it was an exercise to entertain my students, and nothing more." He expects her to look deflated, but she doesn't. So he gestures for her to sit and doesn't offer her a drink. As she straightens her coat, he notes the skin on her hands and face. It's dry and cracked. Psoriasis, maybe? She looks ill in a vague, undefined way. Too thin. She sits on the edge of her seat expectantly, her joints cracking as she does, and he sits back in his armchair defeated, simultaneously sighing and running a hand through his thinning hair. "What do you want to know about the Ossuary Tract?" She shakes her head. He looks confused. She smiles and runs a hand through her drab hair, then pulls a thin book from her satchel. "I found one," she says, coy. "I found a bone book. I wanted you to see." She hands him the book, more of a pamphlet, really. "Collected Stories by J.L. North." The old man would sigh again, but he feels it's becoming repetitive. "It was a game," he says. "It's not real." She looks at him and raises one eyebrow and then looks around the empty room ostentatiously, scanning for anyone who might be taken in by this lie. They sit in silence for a long time. What flavour is it then, your ossuary tract? Despair? Happiness? Lust? If you've read the essay, you know the theory. Each parasite or predator is particular to one emotion, like a hummingbird with a beak that only fits one flower. The girl grins her toothy grin again, wider than ever. Melancholy, she says. The old man furrows his brow and flips to the first story as pigeons fuss at the windowsill outside. Wool and Snow by J.L. North. It is late afternoon. Thank you.
That was a Scare Slam piece from our last Scare Slam that we had at the Horse and Stables, but this next Scare Slam is going to be in a different place because it's part of the Horror Festival. Where's it going to be?
It's going to be at the Old Red Lion. That's where all the productions for the London Horror Festival are going to be held. It's going to be on the 17th of October at 9:30 p.m., mm-hmm. A.k.a. Scare O'Clock, right,
oh, wow.
Guys?
Oh, dear.
Are we making that a thing?
No, I'm sorry. I'll take it back. I'll stick to the official blurb, which is as follows. Lovers of scary stories unite, adding the fear factor to increasingly popular spoken word nights. Storytellers from across the Horror Fest and beyond will share their worst, or should that be best, nightmares at Blackshaw's second annual Scare Slam. Prepare yourself for a night of chilling tales from both sides of the line of veracity. You can come on down for a scare, or if you'd like to contribute a story, which may also involve you being scared, please visit blackshaw9.com, where there will be info going up shortly. But what you should know, in order to kind of think and gather your thoughts, if you have something you might like to submit, 5 minutes maximum per piece. You can use notes. There are also opportunities to work with actors if you prefer not to perform your piece yourself. These are supposed to be solo readings of scary stories or scary anecdotes. You can only submit your own writing, and there's no tech provided, but we will create a spooky atmosphere for you.
Yes, and we probably will be recording them as well, so that's an added bonus if you want to have a recording of your story. But it's a really cool idea. The last one that we did was really fun, and it's sort of Helen Johnson, who's on the show quite regularly, came up with it. It's sort of like a play on a poetry slam, which I've never been to. And I sort of didn't really know what to expect when we did it last November. But it was a great atmosphere. Like, everyone was super, like, collaborative. And everyone was, like, just there to support each other. And everyone just really liked scary sort of stories. Mm. We've been playing some of them out because we put it out as, like, a standalone radio show. But Richard Stratton, who does a lot of work for Blackshaw, he was the only one that got up and did a really long one. He did not stick to any of the rules at all.
Well, he was the only one who spoke off the cuff on the night.
Yes, there was everybody an open spot.
Everybody else had prepared something mm-hmm. and either read or had rehearsed or memorized stuff. He just went up and just extemporized
And it was spooky.
Minutes.
It was spooky.
What's happened to him is like nothing bad, but quite creepy. Eerie very creepy.
So there may be opportunities for that kind of open mic style for this one, but we are prioritising programming. So mm-hmm. If you have kind of a scary story or something that has happened to you or that is fictitious, whatever you like, or a mixture of the two, embellish a true story, then...
And you don't have to disclose on the night which one it is.
No.
Ah.
Keep it secret, keep it safe.
Cool. Well, that's coming up as part of the Horror Festival. We'll be talking about all of this stuff that's coming up over the next couple of weeks before October. And that's nearly the end of the show. So, Matt, have you been thinking about what movie you're going to be doing?
I've been having a little look at the listings. So the big releases over the next couple of weeks are Blair Witch, Bridget Jones's Baby.
That's not one film.
No.
You read that really badly.
Sorry. Blair Witch.
I would say that.
And Bridget Jones. New sentence. Bridget Jones's Diary. Bridget Jones's Baby.
That would make an amazing mashup film.
Yeah. So, I want to see that.
So what? One remake and one threequel.
Yes.
There's Joseph Gordon-Levitt's Snowden, where he does his Edward Snowden impression. Oh. And there's one coming out called My Blind Brother with Zoe Kazan, who did Ruby Sparks, which I don't know if you saw a couple of years ago.
No, I've never seen
that. Which she wrote and starred in, which was a really, really strong debut.
Okay.
So I might check that out, see what she's been up to.
Well, while Matt's going to go see something that is just coming out, Ellie, I believe you've seen all of the films this summer.
Yeah, I'm having some building work done at my house, so I try to be out of it as much as possible.
And what's the best place to be out of it and also cool at the same time?
Yeah, cinema. So what have I seen recently? I saw Bad Moms, just because it's spelled like that, Bad Moms.
Moms. They don't even say mom.
Mom.
Ma'am.
Which actually very funny. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, I'll watch a bit of trash. This would be nice. I might have some brain for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, really good. I thought, yes. Really positive portrayal of different experiences of parenthood for women.
Brilliant.
And very funny.
Yeah.
Who knew Mila Kunis could be that funny?
Do you know what I was more worried about? I was more worried the fact that she doesn't look like a mother.
No.
I was like, how could she? She's not a mum.
But she is a mum in real life.
I know, but she just looks like a child.
She looks very womanly.
She's gorgeous, but she's just lucky that she looks like she's 22.
Yeah, she's not. Very youthful. She's very youthful. But she was very, very funny, and actually her character was really interesting because it's a woman who's been she's been married for 10 plus years, has two children, and she doesn't feel like she's an attractive, young-looking person at all.
Oh, really?
She very, very much the opposite. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make you think, oh, shut up, you're beautiful and I hate you. but she's only one of lots of different characters, and they're not samey, and there's not, you know, I didn't feel like it was slapping stereotypes. I thought, actually, it was really well put together. So, I mean, I would recommend seeing that. That was very enjoyable. I also saw Finding Dory.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
It's just not as good as Finding Nemo, you know? And I read an interesting article, which Helen Johnson mentioned earlier, posted, which was about how they have not beautiful characters in Finding Dory who are portrayed in a negative way because they don't look beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Which I did think of at the time, and now really rankles with me.
Oh, dear.
It's like, oh, if you're not a cute fish, then you're a weird fish.
Oh.
But, you know, I mean, there's some absolutely fantastic voice performances in there, which were very entertaining. But, I mean, really, it had about 8 different endings as well.
No, oh, no, you just wanted to end.
And I actually found myself looking at my watch.
No. Oh.
So,
Do you think Ellen DeGeneres should have just not done that? Because she was pushing for it.
She was great. I mean, like I say, there were some great performances, and she was one of them, but I just feel like it didn't really have a story in it. They were really eking.
Yeah.
That's probably not quite fair. It's about her finding her family, which is a good story, but it just had all these false endings where it just really, I really did honestly believe about 3 times that the film had finished. And then something would go slightly wrong and then they'd have to continue the adventure. And I was like, this adventure is so long. But actually the adventure is not that long. It's only like 89 minutes or something. It just felt really long.
You have a lesser attention span than a child.
I have a very good attention span. But if you keep ending a film and you're not really ending it, I just get angry. I also saw several other children's films. I saw Pete's Dragon.
Oh, yeah.
Did anyone watch the like 1970s?
No.
Cartoon.
Puff the Magic Dragon?
No, Pete's Dragon. It's a Disney film. It's amazing. And it's live action with a cartoon dragon in it. This is the original I'm talking about in the 70s.
Mm-mm.
Oh, it's so good.
Okay.
I mean, it's not. It's awful, but it's brilliant. I loved it. And so I thought, oh, is the remake going to ruin everything? But actually, I felt like it was, in the kind of Ghostbusters way, it felt like a reboot rather than a remake. I mean, it is about the same characters, but they were different enough that I didn't feel betrayed.
Okay.
And it had some nice performances in, and I did do a little cry.
Oh, wow.
Just a little one.
You didn't cry in Finding Dory?
No, I did not.
No?
No.
See, I feel like if it's about family, I would have maybe cried in it. No heartstrings? Because Nemo was sad.
Maybe I got a bit emotional at some points, but
not memorable enough, clearly.
No, not memorably. So, Star Trek Beyond, that's a good film.
I liked that.
Yeah, did you see it?
I did see it.
Yeah. Okay. I really enjoyed the use of Beastie Boys.
Yes.
Excellent use. This is not a film for me.
Oh my goodness, no, but your husband would like it. But it,
Space Trek.
And it was written by Simon Pegg, and I think actually that showed, and it felt, the writing felt tighter and funnier than the previous two, I would say.
Okay.
I have heard a story of somebody who went to see it because they liked Idris Elba and knew nothing else about it and hated sci-fi and hated space and just went, I want to go and see a film with Idris Elba in it. Don't do that if you're in that situation. Don't
Especially if you only like Idris Elba because of how he looks, because you do not get any of that.
See, I was just going to suggest go and see The Jungle Book because his voice is so sexy and scary.
Oh, yeah, if you like his voice, fine. But, he doesn't sound or look like himself really in this one.
Just watch that Macklemore video clip.
Anyway, aside from getting your Idris fix, I also saw, against Matt's advice, Suicide Squad.
Was I right?
Boy, howdy, were you right. I actually messaged Matt immediately afterwards, being like, why did I do this?
Oh, no. Keeps getting worse and worse. Like, this is 3 weeks ago now.
I know. So do not go and see Suicide Squad. I would say you will 100% be second screening that one when it comes out on Netflix, because... My goodness. Terrible.
It'd be a good one to live tweet.
Yeah, maybe. If you want to share your misery. I also saw another children's film, family film, Swallows and Amazons.
Oh, yes, I saw the
brilliant children's books.
I loved the books, and then I saw the trailer and went, and several of our group have had this reaction. This has too much grown-up drama in it.
Yep, it does. They have really shoehorned a lot of what they assume is needed into the film, which is like spy drama stuff that is only about adults. And I would have happily just watched a film about those kids like camping and hanging out.
The stakes are high enough.
Yeah. So I would say if you've read the books, don't see the film. If you have not read the books, feel free to watch the film because it was quite an enjoyable twee little film.
Mm-hmm.
But also then go and read the books because they're good. So I wouldn't bother with the film.
Okay, don't bother with that one.
BFG is amazing.
Yeah.
Go and see it. So good. Mark Rylance as the BFG is so good. Mm-hmm. And it's just magical. If you like the book or the cartoon series that was done in the like early 90s or 80s, then definitely go and see BFG. I saw other stuff, but I'm going to stop now because that is like more than enough.
Yeah, that has been the Blackshaw film review hour.
You've put me to shame.
I don't think mine are as concise or insightful. I'm just like, yeah, it was good, whatever, I liked it. I didn't cry enough. But I do have to say, Ben-Hur is coming out, or has come out. Just don't go and see it on principle, guys, because why would you remake Ben-Hur? People literally died to make the original film. Why have they remade it, please?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, you haven't seen Ben-Hur?
No.
Well, it's a long film. I wouldn't necessarily commit to it, but but they remade it. People literally died. It was a very dangerous film to make because it had chariot races in it before CGI was a thing.
Okay.
And cameramen died.
Oh, dear.
And they have remade the film, presumably using loads of CGI.
That's in a bad taste, I feel. Feel
you didn't need to do that. Just make another Roman gladiator-based film.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's not review that one.
It'll be time to remake Gladiator soon.
Oh, please don't do that.
Why are they remaking Blair Witch?
Is it a remake, reboot?
Or is it
reboot,
a sequel?
Is it like
reboot,
a sequel or like a prequel?
A prebootquel.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what I hate more than a prequel. A goddamn sequel. No, a prequel. A prequel is the one that I hate. I don't mind a sequel. I don't like a prequel. I don't want to know what happened before the freaking movie. Like, who cares about that stuff?
Yeah.
The movie happened.
I do not want to know how Han Solo got the way he was.
Oh, yeah, that Star Wars thing. I mean, that's just confusing. Come on. Anyway.
If anyone has any strong feelings on prequels, sequels, reboots, remakes,
please
any
tweet
other
us.
Words to do with films, let us know.
Yeah, we'll be back with you in a fortnight's time. That's been the Blackshaw Arts Hour. Thank you, Matt, and thank you, Ellie, and good night.
Bye. Good night.